Laudato Jesus Christus. This is the English program of Vatican Radio.
Hello and welcome to this edition of our English feature program. I'm Philippa Hitchin. Coming up today, 100 Days of Peace pioneered by the churches in Britain brings the Olympic truce back into the 2012 London Games. A top Vatican official travels to the UK and Ireland to explore ecumenism in action. And looking ahead to the start of the International Eucharistic Congress with the Anglican Archbishop of Dublin. The idea of an Olympic truce traces its origins back to the 8th century BC, when a literal laying down of arms was observed to allow athletes and spectators to travel safely to and from the games in ancient Greece. Over recent years, that ideal has been revived in order to promote peace and greater international cooperation in our contemporary world. For the London 2012 Olympic Games, Christian churches in the UK have also picked up on this theme of 100 days of peace before and after this major sporting event, and are encouraging their communities to come up with new ways of promoting peace in homes and schools, parishes and dioceses, in the hopes of leaving a lasting legacy for the nation long after the Olympic torch has moved on. 100 Days of Peace will be launched at an all-night prayer vigil in London's central Trafalgar Square on Friday, June the 8th, by church leaders including Archbishop Vincent Nicholls of Westminster and the Anglican Bishop of London, Richard Chartres. Among the projects that are in the works to support this push for peace is a publication entitled Your Journey to Peace, produced by Redemptorist Publications in partnership with Missio and the faith-based More Than Gold Olympic organisation. Here to tell us more about it is one of the editors and former Vatican Radio colleague, Sister Janet Ferns.
It stems from the original Olympic Games, when there used to be a truce declared so that athletes could travel to the Games. And there were actually heavy penalties for anyone who did any fighting during that time. And so the idea of having an Olympic truce has been brought to birth again. And it was just a few months ago, with the involvement of the churches in these Olympic Games, somebody got the bright idea in the Westminster Archdiocese of actually having 100 days of peace to surround the Olympics and the Paralympics. And then it was realized that the churches were involved in promoting the 100 days of peace, but the thing that was really needed was for people to pray for peace. And so that was where we came involved.
You mentioned the Archdiocese of Westminster there, but it's not just a Catholic Church initiative, is it? It's very ecumenical.
It's absolutely ecumenical. There are so many Christian churches and non-Christian bodies involved as well. So you've got the Hindus and the Sikhs and the Muslims. Just about anybody who believes in God in whatever shape or form has become involved in this. And it's to try and show the world that there's more to the Olympics than just winning a medal.
You said that's where you became involved. Redemptorist Publications has become involved, providing a book of prayers, reflections, practical ideas. It's called Your Journey to Peace, isn't it? Tell us a bit more about it.
Well, this is actually the first time that Redemptorist Publications and Missio have worked together on a venture like this. And we were also working with More Than Gold, the sort of religious body that's working alongside the Olympics. So we thought, well, wouldn't it be a nice idea to produce a booklet of prayers, quick reflections for every day, and perhaps some longer features that would highlight different aspects of peace, but would also be there for people who've got a little bit more time. It's the only official booklet of prayer booklet to come out to accompany the Olympics. And it's divided into five sections: family, unity, dialogue, mission, and culminating in peace. And we've got five different people to write 10 reflections on each of those themes. And then we've got other people to write more reflective pieces. So we've got, for instance, Bishop Pat Lynch writing about mission. But we've also got James Parker from More Than Gold writing about how families are going to be accommodating the families of athletes, because people are coming across from all different countries and they can't necessarily pay the cost of accommodation in London, so families are going to be putting them up. We've got two articles about competitors in the Olympics. We've got Tim Brabants, for instance, who is in the kayak events, and Missy Franklin, who is a young American. She's a current world record holder. She's a swimmer. So we're just trying to say that while we're looking to work towards peace, let's pray for peace at the same time.
This whole initiative is going to be launched at a prayer vigil, isn't it, on Friday, June the 8th?
Yes, and it's going to be in Trafalgar Square. It's going to be an amazing thing, actually. It's going to run for 12 hours, and it's going to close with leaders of many different faiths present. And people are just going to be there praying for peace throughout the night and singing, and various gospel choirs and other singers are going to be there praying for peace.
So a very public demonstration of the role of faith around this Olympic Games. The initiative goes on for 100 days, as you say, doesn't it, until October the 28th?
That's right, yes. And then there will be another closing celebration there. And we're hoping that we'll be able to get a couple of Olympians and Paralympians involved in that as well, so that the whole thing is surrounded in prayer, because so much in society today is taking God out of it. Well, let's put him back in. That's the basic idea of it.
There are some other quite interesting initiatives around this. I see something about keeping our cities safe, a number of very practical initiatives about promoting peace 1 year on, of course, from those infamous riots that took place a year ago.
Yes, and I think people have just tried over the Olympics to be as practical as possible, to show that faith is carried out in action. It's not just a case of putting your hands together and staring up into the sky. And so coming up with practical initiatives, like, for instance, the Jimmy Missen Foundation is having a venture, Release the Peace, and they will have a car which is going to be signed by celebrities who are supporting the Initiative for Peace, and they're going to be rewarding young people who have done something to contribute to building peace in their area, because young people had such a bad press last year through the riots. And it's to try and show that, well, they were the minority. The majority of young people are really trying to do something positive.
This 100 Days of Peace is very much aimed at young people and even young children as well, isn't it?
It is. And so there are resources that are being produced especially for young people and young children. For instance, there is one poster that's being produced that has a different activity for every day of the 100 days. They'll have to find out the flag of one of the countries that is taking part in the Olympics, so that they'll have to go to an atlas or a map, or they'll have to draw the flag or find out something about a country. So it's to try and promote understanding and keep them occupied as well and involved.
Finally, Janet, just tell us where this publication, Your Journey to Peace, can be found. It's available online, isn't it?
Yes, it can be ordered online, but it's also going to be available through every parish in the country. And I'm sure that all the non-Catholic churches, as well as the Catholic churches, will be making it available. We know that the Anglicans and the Methodists, for instance, are very interested in using it, which is why we've tried to make it as broad-based as we possibly can. We've got Anglican as well as Catholic contributors, and hopefully it's something that will appeal to people of all denominations. So it will be widely available throughout the country.
My thanks there to Sister Janet Ferns. And that publication, Your Journey to Peace, is available on the Redemptorist Publications website, www.rpbooks.co.uk. An an ecumenical perspective on the relationship between Eucharist and ecclesial communion. That'll be the focus of reflections from the head of the Vatican's Council for Christian Unity, Cardinal Kurt Koch, at a symposium preceding the International Eucharistic Congress, taking place in Dublin from June the 10th to the 17th. The Cardinal's trip to Dublin marks the first stop on a four-day tour, which will take him on to Canterbury and London for an in-depth encounter with the Church of England. Travelling with the Cardinal is the official in charge of Anglican and Methodist relations at the Council for Christian Unity, Monsignor Mark Langham, who told me more about the aims of this visit.
The Cardinal was very keen to visit Dublin on this important occasion because, of course, the Eucharistic Congress, it's such a key moment in the life of the Church in Ireland, but in general as well. And His Eminence was very keen to support this initiative. And he is particularly interested in the way that our Eucharistic faith can help us grow together as a Church, but also can help us reach out towards other communities and can really be at the heart of our ecumenical life.
In fact, ecumenism is going to be a big feature, isn't it? A focus of the first day of the Congress.
That's correct, and it's wonderful that the Cardinal is able to be there as a key figure in the ecumenical world to promote the message of the Church, of the Pontifical Council for promoting Christian unity, and to remind us that the Eucharist is at the centre of our life, and that includes the centre of our life as ecumenical Catholics as well.
From Dublin, you're heading on to Canterbury, aren't you? In a sense, the heart of the Anglican Communion. Tell us a bit about the events that will take place there.
The Cardinal is going to pay his respects to Archbishop Rowan Williams, and that's become a very poignant moment now that we know that Archbishop Rowan is going to be retiring at the end of the year. But it's also an opportunity for His Eminence to get a little bit of experience of the diversity and richness of the Church of England and the wider Anglican Communion. It's usual at the beginning of a presidency of a pontifical council that the cardinal, the president, would visit different churches and different ecclesial communities. And this is an opportunity for him to get to know a little bit more about the Church of England and the wider Anglican Communion. Where better to start than in the Mother Church of the Anglican Communion at Canterbury?
Recalling Pope John Paul II's historic visit there back in 1982...
The meeting that we're going to have there will be very redolent with that beautiful occasion when Archbishop Runcie and Pope John Paul prayed together. The image of them praying together at the tomb of St. Thomas of Canterbury has been an inspiring image for generations of ecumenists, and so that memory will be very strong in our meeting at Canterbury.
You will be praying, won't you, at the tomb of another great saint there in Canterbury, if I'm not mistaken?
Yes, there's also a service and an ecumenical pilgrimage to St. Alphege, who was already a great martyr at the time of St. Thomas of Becket. And incidentally, it's St. Alphege that St. Thomas invoked as he was martyred. So this really takes us back to the common heritage martyrs that we both share, takes us back to the venerable history of Canterbury Cathedral, and will also be a wonderful occasion for the Cardinal to meet different parishes, Anglican, Roman Catholic and Orthodox, who will be there on pilgrimage to honour St. Alphege.
You're then moving on to London as well, aren't you, for some interesting meetings there, Catholic and Anglican?
We're going to have a very interesting set of meetings, basing ourselves at Lambeth Palace, the Archbishop of Canterbury's London home. We're going to meet different groups and individuals who represent different strands of the tradition of Anglicanism, both in England and in the wider community. So we're going to meet some Anglican religious sisters. We're going to meet with with the Reverend Nicky Gumbel and members of the Alpha community. The Alpha course, which began in the evangelical tradition of the Church of England, has spread to become a tool of evangelization, not just in the Church of England, but in lots of churches, including the Roman Catholic Church.
So looking ahead to the Synod on evangelization in the autumn.
It really ties in a most interesting way with that, and the Alpha course has submitted some very interesting observations ahead of the Synod. So a lot of our discussion will be about the role of new evangelization and how Alpha can contribute to that.
You're also going to see some very practical projects, aren't you? The Church in Action, the social ministry.
We are. It's very important that the Cardinal is introduced to the great tradition of social action within the Church of England. We're going to St Martin in the Fields, a very important central London parish right there in Trafalgar Square, which has a magnificent programme of outreach to the homeless, to those on the margins, very much inspired by their gospel values, by their Christian faith. And it will be wonderful to meet the team there that does such rich work and such enormous Christian ministry right in the centre of London.
This is, as you say, very much a getting to know the Church of England, the Anglican Communion. What would you say, perhaps, are the goals beyond that? Can we expect any kind of significant developments from this visit?
I don't think it's going to be a visit where there'll be any particular great statements or any new initiatives. It's something that I think will bear fruit much more generally and much more gradually, because as His Eminence visits the Church of England, and in other visits that he makes, this will help deepen his knowledge and understanding of these communions and churches. It will also build up that all-important aspect of personal relationships, getting to know key figures. And this will be of great value and great deepening of our understanding in our ecumenical relations in future. It's very important to note that the Cardinal will also meet members of ARCIC and the English Anglican Roman Catholic Dialogue, and so that's going to be very much in our minds as well. We're not going to try and solve things on this visit, but we will deepen our background and deepen personal relationships that will help the relations in future.
My thanks there to Monsignor Mark Langham, in charge of Anglican and Methodist relations at the Pontifical Council for Promoting Christian Unity. As you heard there, the International Eucharistic Congress takes place in Dublin, Ireland from June the 10th to the 17th, preceded by a four-day symposium at St Patrick's Seminary in Maynooth. The Congress itself gets underway with a Mass on Sunday, followed by an opening day with a very ecumenical flavour, exploring the theme Communion in One Baptism. Presiding at a special ecumenical liturgy on the Monday will be the Anglican Archbishop of Dublin, Reverend Michael Jackson, who talked to my colleague Emma McCarthy about his hopes and about the often difficult journey towards Christian unity in Ireland today.
I think one of the important things that comes across as I look at the excellent preparatory material is that communion, understood most widely, is very much at the heart of this Congress. And so baptism, as something which is recognized and respected and practiced across the traditions in a very specific way, is a wonderful way into the exploration of communion as shared life. So that's, in a sense, why I'm particularly excited to be part of it. And, you know, the organising committee have been in touch with me in a variety of ways. And I think taking the sense of baptism in water and the Spirit and using that as a way of exploring together a number of things important in the life of the churches and of our nation at this time is a very exciting place to be.
In fact, Archbishop Jackson, the importance of the ecumenical aspect of the Congress in the life of Christians in Ireland, it's really a call for all the churches, not just the Catholic or Church of Ireland, but also the Methodist Church, the Presbyterians, all those present there, to really focus on the ecumenical journey, isn't it?
It is. And in some ways, this has been symbolised already through the bell, which has made its way across the country. And not only were Archbishop Diarmaid Martin and I at the Ploughing Championship where the bell was there, but actually the leaders of the other churches as well. And I think two things in particular will probably happen. There's an element of what I would call internal instruction, which is actually facilitating people who are faithful in the Roman Catholic tradition to see communion as something beyond Eucharist, something within it and something beyond it, and to enable the rest of us to see communion in the same light. And I think, you know, I might as well be quite honest about this. It's important for us all, as it were, to see beyond what to many people is an ecumenical logjam, which is the fact that we do not together celebrate and share the Eucharist. I think what the Eucharistic Congress is encouraging us to do is to take the fullness of Eucharist in the tradition of each of us and actually to take that sense of belonging to Christ and to sharing that spirit through communion understood very widely, together with one another and also in the life of the communities where we are. And the whole world knows of the current economic and social difficulties which we have in Ireland. This, I think, is a tremendous invitation to all of us who carry the cross of Christ to make a contribution together to trying to formulate and shape a fresh direction for our society.
It really will be a very strong moment of communion that opens this week-long Congress that sees all of the leaders of the Church, and you in particular as a representative of the Church of Ireland, leading the liturgy on the first day, Monday. Can you speak to us perhaps about the current state of ecumenical dialogue between the different churches in Ireland, the progresses it has made, the challenges that remain, particularly keeping in mind that a lot of our audience are an international audience, and so perhaps the only memories they have of relations between the Christian churches in Ireland, unfortunately, is associated with the troubles in the north?
I think one of the things that has come through very strongly to me, having worked the last 10 years, specifically in Northern Ireland in a cross-border diocese, which is the Diocese of Clogher, and now coming to work in Dublin, is that the opportunity for us all to live peaceably and also creatively in this sense of communion is now very important. People internationally, of course, are right to remember Ireland in terms of the divisions which kind of have held here throughout history. But within the context of them, there have been many principled people of Christian faith and also of concern for society who have tried to push people beyond that. Now, I think this very public and this very worldwide expression of a desire to be a fresh and a new community together through the Eucharist and through baptism is actually very important. And that's why I said earlier that it's a way, as it were, of a sort of internal instruction and information for Roman Catholic people, and also a way of offering that sense of fresh beginning to the rest of us. Within my own context, I have always felt that it's much better to do together what it would not be complete to do apart. But within that framework, one has, of course, to live within the discipline of one's own church and of other churches as well. Many people, I think, are saddened, frustrated at the fact that it's not possible for people to share officially the Eucharist together. And I can understand that pain as much as anything, because these people are faithful and they read their Bible and they know John chapter 17 and the whole gift of God, that we be one as the Father and the Son are one. But I think we need to work with a mixture of holy patience and holy impatience. And if this is the situation institutionally where the churches are, we need to dig deeper and look for ways in which we can express that solidarity, that togetherness, and that communion Because again, I think there's very helpful information in relation to this, which has gone out ahead of time. Because there is a communion, of course, of the sacraments. But there's also a communion of charity. There's a communion of belonging to one another. There's a communion of faith and also a communion of action. And I think what I'd love to see coming out of the Congress is that those who are leaders, and leaders aren't always people at the top, those who are leaders in their own community might have the opportunity to work through what communion in fact means in the situation in which we find ourselves on the ground. So I think there's tremendous potential for the future in relation to all of this.
In fact, if I may add just one other question, Archbishop Rowan Williams' Easter message, his sermon on Easter Sunday, was of profound interest, but it also was something that was very similar to what Pope Benedict has been speaking about, and that is the marginalisation of God and of faith from society. This is something that is particularly concerning perhaps in the Anglophone world, in the United Kingdom and in Ireland. Is this something that you see the churches being able to work more jointly onto, being in communion, to bringing faith back within society? Is it a problem that also faces the Archdiocese of Dublin and the wider church in Ireland?
It does indeed. I mean, I regularly say that a divided Christian witness convinces nobody. I think it doesn't convince people inside the churches, and it certainly doesn't convince people who look quizzically at the churches. And I think one of the wonderful opportunities that we now have is to build in simplicity rather than, as it were, building in a massive picture. Communities who work together on issues which actually preserve that community, develop it and enrich it, are telling us very interesting things. And those of us who maybe have a bigger or a broader responsibility do well to listen to them, so that there are examples of good practice, there are situations where people rejoice in their Christian faith, where they actually share it not only with one another, but with other people, with the generosity which enhances the life experience of those people. And that interaction, I'm very happy to call it communion because I think it is lived communion, is something that I'd hope would come out. As I said, I mean, there are frustrations. But as I would talk with people here and as I, develop what is now a very strong personal friendship and working relationship with Archbishop Diarmaid Martin, I also see that there is a tremendous willingness to push the boat out and to explore things that are of common concern and common interest. And the same would hold with the Presbyterian and the Methodist Church. I think we're in a new place. I also think that we have a very interesting possibility in Ireland because we have a number of Orthodox traditions and they're very keen to work in with us through the Irish Council of Churches. I mean, the new president of the Irish Council of Churches is a Romanian Orthodox priest. So there's a whole range of stuff which is happening in Ireland. And one of the things in which, people from outside Ireland might be interested is that our smaller scale means that we need to know one another. And so we meet one another on a much more personal basis, and things in that way become quite possible. It's much easier, in a way, to explore this sense of adventure and good faith where actually you meet people on a regular basis.
Thanks there to the Anglican Archbishop of Dublin, Reverend Michael Jackson, talking to my colleague Emma McCarthy. And Emma herself will be in Dublin throughout the International Eucharistic Congress, keeping us up to date with details of that event from June the 10th to the 17th. And that's all from me, Philippa Hitchin, and from all of us here at the English Programme for today. You're listening to Vatican Radio. Laudato Jesus Christus.